of new things in the room, a lot of new things, but as Ohio State would say, one thing not new. That's good. That was actually something I taught the students of our church. So we have everyone from CSM, Crossroads, Stu Bishop, everyone say hello. Yes, up there. I don't actually have to hit my line. I was going to say we have, as Ohio State would say, the best damn band in the land. Don't we, huh? Yes. In case you're wondering, I spoke at CSM a couple weeks ago, and I told them this thing I used to love to do when I was more immature than I am right now, which is not that much more immature, actually. You know, it's really funny. Just be in a restaurant sometime and have all your friends and say, okay, on the count of three, laugh as loud as you possibly can. You go, one, two, and it's funny because then you laugh for like 5 minutes after that. Actually, let's do it right now. Let's just do a little practice. I've never done this before with this many people, okay? So on three, you got to laugh as loud and obnoxiously as you possibly can, okay? Ready? Here we go. See what I mean? Then you keep laughing for a couple minutes after that. It's very fun. It really is. All right, a few are first today. First is my first cup of coffee in the new building right here. Huh? First cup. You got to love that. First cup of coffee on a Sunday morning. Oh shoot, I should have, I'm sorry, let me bring that over here, if I could, no, you can have it, go ahead, you can have a cup of coffee. You take your coffee seriously, well, you know, you take your coffee seriously, but you know, one thing we don't take is our building seriously. And, you know, we want to do this just because, hey, we're a new place, but we don't worship buildings. Buildings aren't all that. In many ways, things are different around here, but it's just a building. It's metal. It's concrete. That's all it is. The most important thing are the people that are in the place, and actually more important, the God who made the people that are in this place. That's right. So just because sound system sounds nicer, screens are brighter, and all that kind of stuff, we are making concerted effort to not be pro-buildings. We are not pro-buildings, as the coffee stains show. So now if you spill your coffee, don't feel bad about it. I already made a stain before you did, and probably a bigger stain you'll ever actually make. So that's a first. Here's another first. I was just noticing this morning, I never saw these. There's so many cool things that are happening around here that I have no influence on, which is probably a very good thing. That's probably why cool things are happening. I was reading this little flyer that you can give to friends to invite them. This is cracking me up. And we have our very first offensive thing as well this morning. How about question number four? You see, that's question number four. Asking you makes me feel, what's our favorite one there? Like I have to pee. Yes. Our first semi-offensive thing ever given at Crossroads. That's, you know, that's good. See, same old Crossroads. Same old thing. I'm going to, we're going to talk today. Something else we do at the church is we recognize that it is Christmas time. It comes around every 365 days. Or actually now, because that station starts playing at the day of Halloween, about every 200 days, you know. Turn on that station, wanted to hear normal music, and it was on Halloween. I'm hearing Carpenter's Christmas while I'm looking at goblins and ghouls on the houses I drive by. Christmas isn't really all that unexpected anymore. It doesn't surprise us, but the message of Christmas does. And we're talking today about an unexpected interruption of scandalous love. And before we talk about that and start that series, let's just pray again, okay? God, thank you for this place and the people in this place and the fun we've already had in here. And the fun we are going to continue to have in here. And not just the fun, but the meaningfulness. The ability to connect with you. Many of us in here might come to know you or understand you for the very first time in our lives. Other of us might know you, but there's something about you that we really have not understood. And I hope that that happens today. Touch us all in a very unique way. And it's in your name that I pray. Amen. So, one way that you know Christmas is upon you is when you are in waiting lines, checking out at a store. That's how you know Christmas is upon you. You know, you're kind of in those lines at the store, and you're trying to figure out exactly which line to go in. And everybody who has at least a first grade IQ knows what line. First grade IQ, how do you figure out what line you go in? Yeah, sure. So you just kind of count up how many people and you go, I'm going to go to the one that has the fewest amount of people. And then when you get to be like a fourth grader, fourth grade IQ, you have a different equation. It amps it up a little bit because not only do you look for the shortest line, but what now do you look for? Fewest items. That's right. Because, you know, you could be in a line that has the fewest number of people, but one person has 50 things and that totally messes you up. So you learn to do this little equation in your mind that says, oh, this one's shorter because the math and the average 3.2 gives the person this is the one to do, something like that. And then once you get to be like ninth grade IQ, which some of us are still struggling with, you might not even thought of this equation yet. This equation is what? What is the highest level of equation to figure out what line to go in? Shop online. That is the best one. That's shop online. But no, if you're doing the old-fashioned one, it is try to figure out who best check. Ooh, that's a good one. That's why I'm only, I guess I only have ninth grade IQ. That would be a good one. How many of you look at the checker and see who punched the numbers fastest? I've been missing out. I haven't thought of that. I haven't considered that at all. You know what I do is I try to look and figure out who are the people that are going to start to write checks. That's the one that bums me out. People like pull out their check and then do you have a check card? No. And they got to go through this whole thing. And then it gets really interesting. Have you ever been in line when you're going up? I know we all have. And you're waiting in line and you're just about to be the next person. And then you hear that thing that you wish you would have heard 10 minutes ago and you're mad that you hear it now. What is it? New line open on four! New line open on four! And what happens? The people on the very end of the line sprint, and they beat you. Which, I'm competitive, that doesn't bother me, but they come up and they beat you. And that is the time when we see that the last will be first, and the first will be last. I know we have all kinds of folks in here of different understandings of the Bible, different understandings of God, but probably no matter where you are spiritually, everybody in here has heard that phrase. The last will be first and the first will be last. It comes from Jesus. Jesus made that phrase. The last will be first, the first will be last. It's a great phrase. Unfortunately, the only time we ever see it is in checkout lines. Because we all know the last aren't first and the first aren't last. Those who have money keep all the money. Those who don't have money never seem to get money. Those who have influence keep all the influence. Those who don't have influence just get the drippings. I mean, we don't really see that happening because the first is first. The prettier first. The good looking are first. The popular are first. All of that stuff. And wouldn't it be nice if the last are first or we would see that more often? Well, we actually do see that with the Christmas story. That's what we're going to look at today, is that lessness comes. Now, greatness comes from lessness. It's also the first word I made up in this building, by the way. Lessness. Greatness comes from lessness. This is a core attribute in the Christmas story. Mary is on the scene, and she is also going to be a mom. That's why some people call her Mother Mary. Mary, and the whole story of Christmas shows that greatness comes out of lessness. She's visited by an angel, and I know that there's some things in the Christmas story that you've got to take on faith, and I just got to say right now, I'm not going to be able to handle every objection, like, did God really impregnate a virgin, and God make a virgin pregnant, and all that kind of stuff. I know it's a big stretch for some of us. You're going to have to just take it at face value to get anything out of this service. I'm going to deal with it more specifically in 2 weeks when we talk about spirituality. I'm going to deal with that in 2 weeks. But the whole story of Mary is one of lessness. We think of somebody who is pregnant or somebody who's going to be a mother, and we think of someone who's 22, 30, 40. Mary was less, 13, probably 13 years old. You know, those guys up there did that whole thing, kind of make me laugh. They have 1, 2, 3 laugh. Ah! Some of us in here, I guarantee some of us had an attitude going, oh, those damn kids. What are they doing? It's just like, so, why? Because you know what happens? Churches, we tend to look at the younger as the less. You know, and the older you are, the more influence you have. The older you are, the more committees you can sit on. The older you are, where do we get that from? You know, we didn't get that from Jesus. His mom was 13. The greatest woman who ever walked planet Earth, I believe. The greatest one. Why do I think the greatest woman who ever walked planet Earth? Because God chose her to bear his child. If I had the choice to choose anyone to bear my child, I'd choose the greatest person walking planet Earth. That was a 13-year-old. Less than. Beneath. And greatness comes out of her. And so God looks at her, and an angel comes and visits the angel. Or angel comes, yeah, the angel comes and visits Mary. And unveils this plan that through you, a king is going to come. Through you, the Messiah is going to come. Through you, all that stuff is going to happen. And Mary doesn't believe it. Doesn't believe it. In fact, this is exactly what the angel says to her. He says this, he will be great. Greatness will be from him. You are lessness, but greatness will go. He will be great? What? No, great is not something that Mary would think of as a 13-year-old working class poor. She was working class poor. You didn't go from this status to this status in that culture, in that country. Today, it's still hard. But today, at least you have grants you can get or loans you could get or special governmental programs or something. Didn't have any of that. Those who were less never became great. And yet, the angel, God, says to Mary, You are having greatness in the midst of you. Greatness is going to come out of lessness. The only time she's heard great is when it's been referred to those who are literally great. Somebody like Herod. Herod the Great. That's who he's called. Herod the Great. He was the ruler. He was the great one that oversaw the whole region. He was kind of on the payroll or had the authority from the nation of Rome to keep all the Jews in this whole territory under control. He was called Herod the Great. This guy was great. This defined greatness. This was a guy who was one of the greatest architects who ever lived. He invented indoor flushing. He did. First indoor stuff that ever happened. He'd go in your room, do your deal, and it'll be right by the ocean. And he had a design so when the tide raises up, it fills up pipes that come up and takes away all the little poo-poo. Takes it all out and all the stuff out. He invented this. He invented it. Here's some of the things that he invented or created or commissioned. Here's some of the places he lived. On the left, we've got one of his primary living residences. And you can see it's built up. It's this huge mountain because he was the great. He liked to feel like he was above everybody. And he also was a very paranoid person. By the way, the greater you are, the more paranoid you are because the more you had to lose. And so he had this mountain where he could look and see if anyone was going to have a surge on where he was living, if anybody was going to try to overtake him. And he would have multiple palaces, and the one on the right was his summer palace cottage on the right. Yeah, you might know it by Masada. This is the place where about 70 AD, the Jews were trying to escape, the renegade Jews, to try to maintain their independence and get away from Roman rule. They escaped to this place, which at that point was his abandoned palace. It was incredible. I've been to this place. They actually have indoor saunas. Even though they had no electricity and stuff back then, he had indoor sauna. You try to figure out how you get water at the top of a mountain, how you get it heated, how you have it fill a room. It was stunning. You can still see it today. You can still see the little ceramic tiles. And yet, he never used this place. There's no evidence to suggest that he ever went to this palace. This was where he would go in the last-ditch effort to save his life in case his kingdom was coming under attack. He would go there and he'd be completely and totally safe. He was Herod the Great because he would do anything to maintain his power. He was a great idiot. He was a great terrorist. He was a great suppressor. He killed people in his own family who he thought might want to get his throne. Two of his sons he killed. One of his sons he killed 5 days before his own death because he thought his son was trying to get to the throne. Okay, this guy was trying to preserve all that he was, to the point where he gathered all the other greats in the kingdom, all the nobles, all the aristocracy, if you will, at that time. He issued an order before he died, I want them all gathered to one room. And in that one room, the day I die, you are to slaughter everybody else in the entire land who's great. And in this way, he ensured that there was weeping and depression in the land when he died. Because he knew when he died, no one would be upset. But if he had everybody wiped out who people liked, then there would be weeping and mourning in the land. Herod the Great. He was great. He could do these things. Great people can do these things. And Mary is told, what's come in your womb? He is great. You got to think that Mary's thinking, come on. Come on. Who am I? Who am I? I'm not married. I've not had sex. I'm 13. I'm working class poor. And Jesus' beginning is of the less. Here we have right here. Part of Jesus' beginning. You might know the song if you grew up in a traditional church and were forced to sing it like I was. Away in a manger, in a crib for a bed. That's about as excited as I ever got when I sang that. Away in a manger. You know, that kind of. I'm actually sounding like Mr. Bean when I sing that, aren't I? You ever seen Mr. Bean? Away in a manger. Away in a manger was not a nice birthing room, not a place that was a barn that Jesus went to. This is a manger. This is the place that Jesus was placed after he was born. You know what this is? This is a feeding trough. This is where cattle, where horses, where oxen stick their gnarly faces inside to grab hay. It's a feeding trough. It's a horse slobber bowl is what it is. It's a slobber pit. It's a slobber pit. This is the most bacterial-ridden, enzyme-laden, disgusting place you could possibly think of. This is where beasts slobbered and chomped and chewed. I'm thinking about getting a dog, and I like big dogs. And The only thing I got to look at is I don't want like a dog that slobbers. I don't dig slobber, okay? Definitely don't dig slobber if I got to put my kid in it. Part of the Christmas story is Mary wraps Jesus in swaddling clothes. You might have heard that, oh, nice, wrapped in swaddling clothes. Wrapped in swaddling clothes, not to keep his little pinkies and little toesies warm. Wrapped in swaddling clothes to keep him disinfected from all the slobber where she was going to place him. Really? Really? Someone told me last night they had friends coming over to visit them. Didn't have a lot of money, don't have a lot of money, and they broke down the side of the road. And she broke down and she had a little infant with her and ended up having to go to the gas station. And strange twist of circumstance, had to put her baby down on the floor and had to wrap him in a blanket, put him on the floor. That's very similar to what Mary had to do. Who in the world puts a baby on a bathroom floor? The less, that's who. The ones that don't have resources. Who in the world would, you have no other options. You have other, that, see, the less are forced to do it. The great never have to do that. The great can always find a Holiday Inn or bribe somebody to get a good place. Not Mary. Not Mary. She was the less. Jesus was born in utter and complete lessness. Now, he was born that way, but it continues on that way. Because as he's growing up, people start looking at Joseph and they look at Jesus. Joseph, you know, comes into the plan. Joseph accepts begrudgingly at the beginning that he's going to go ahead and marry Mary, even though she's pregnant with somebody else's kid. And she says, and it's God's. And he says, okay, yeah. But they work through that, and Jesus starts to grow up. And we're not sure if it's because people see Joseph and they see Jesus and they go, you know what? Their noses are different. Or their ears are different. Or because we don't know if it's that or if it's because Mary has told a few safe people what's happened to her and word has spread around that Joseph is not the child's physical father. And word comes out that this is a bastard. This is a bastard. Now, we say that and we think of the swear word. It's not a swear word. It's just a statement of reality. It's a statement of reality. Don't know who the physical father is. Illegitimate child. And so as Jesus starts to grow up, this is how people think that he's really not all that. Because in Jewish culture, to know your father was to know you. Your identity was wrapped up in who your father was. Jesus, the son of Joseph, the son of a carpenter. You know, Betsy, the son of, you know, Jeremy from, boom. Your identity was wrapped up in who your father was. Like father, like son. That's why Jesus one time when he says, when you've seen me, you've seen my father. People understood exactly what he was saying. He's saying, I have the same identity, the same essence as God the Father. And people were incredibly angry at this. Even today in our enlightened culture, those of us who are bastards are not respected, which is me. I'm adopted. And I know some of us are going, oh, really? Like you all of a sudden are thinking I'm like Oliver Twist and, you know, drinking cold milk or warm milk or infected milk and having, you know, socks with holes in them. I'm adopted, never met either my physical parents. And I know in our enlightened day, even though adoption isn't a stigma, still, I talk with some people about that and they're, I'm sorry, really? Sorry for what? Man, I had great parents. It all worked out good. It's all good. It's good. It's all good. But it's kind of, it's weird. You are? You're like that? Even in our enlightened day. In fact, I've had people criticize me and be bummed out at me because they felt like I was hiding deep issues that I needed counseling for because I'm adopted and there's deep issues I haven't dealt with out of my adoption, you know. I wouldn't deny I have deep issues. I'm very clear about that. I'm not, and maybe I do need counseling, okay? Maybe. But not tied to my adoption. Not tied to that. But even in our culture, that's the way it, well, back then, amplify that like 100 times. Oh, you don't know who your dad is. Who's your daddy? No one knows who your daddy is. You don't know your daddy. You are the less. In Jewish culture at that time, you were the utter scum of the earth, less of the less. So Jesus is born the worst place he can be born, placed the worst place to be placed. And as he grows up, he has this cloud over his head. But what do you know? Jesus doesn't stay less. He starts growing in greatness. He starts growing in stature. He starts getting more strong. He starts getting muscles. He starts getting smarter. He starts growing in the awareness of who he is. He starts growing in his speaking skills. He starts speaking about who God is. He starts having these miracles happen through him. He starts touching people and they start getting healed and encouraging people. People are wanting to be around Jesus. They're fired about him. And every time someone's around Jesus, they get threatened. So Herod gets threatened that Jesus is is supposedly the king of the Jews is being born somewhere, and the way he quells the possible rebellion is he has every baby wiped out 2 years and under. Kill them all. Wipe them out. It's called the slaughter of the innocents. But as Jesus goes up, and he escapes that because his parents take him away, as Jesus grows up and he gets greater and greater and growing and in stature, now the people who are threatened by him are the religious. We just came up with a whole series, Death of Religion. Man, you want to talk about people who want to protect their turf? It's the religious. This is the way you have to be, and don't go there. And so the religious authorities, they start seeing that people are listening to Jesus. They start seeing that he's doing things that they can't do. And what do? Oh, I know. Let's go back to the oldest play in the book. Let's poke fun at his dad. Hey, Jesus. Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? They start doing that kind of thing. Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh, no one knows who your daddy is, do they? And this is one of the insults that they throw at him. You're illegitimate. Let's take a look at what they say to him in John chapter 8. You know what? We're not illegitimate children, they protested. The only father we have is God. We're not bastards. We're not. You are. The father we have, the identity that we have our identity in God because we are just like God and God loves us even though we're slamming on people who are the least of these. And see, this is why this is scandalous. Unexpected interruption of scandalous love. It is scandalous. The greatness is going to start with lessness. This greatness is going to come out of lessness. Hold on, you're supposed to be the Messiah, you're supposed to be the King, but yet you're illegitimate. Illegitimate Savior, bastard Messiah, bastard King. Bastard King? That passage is, the words of that song are a rough translation and interpretation of words about the coming Messiah out of the book of Isaiah, which is a prophecy written about the coming Messiah, the coming Christ, the coming King, written long before Jesus was actually born. And it spells out in there that this Messiah is not going to be all that great looking. He's going to be mocked, going to be disrespected, predicted it and said it. And that's exactly what Jesus' life plan was like. Mocked and disrespected where he was placed, mocked and disrespected as a result of his lack of an earthly father or lack of a known earthly father. Now, as Jesus was being given these insults, we sometimes think of Jesus as just taking his punishment 24/7. And oftentimes he did. But other times he decided to stand and fight. And if you want to see Jesus getting feisty sometime, read John chapter 8 and chapter 9. Because this discourse between him and the religious people, it is not nice. It is not good. Death of religion was in his lips. The death of religion and trying to come against religious people and their interpretation of how to get with God was through and through in him interacting with these folks. So as they're calling him mean things and discrediting him, he says, we'll debate who my dad is at some point, but you know what? Who's your dad? Who's your dad? Let's talk about who your daddy is because, you're acting like the one who is your father. Who's your father? Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh, let's see. Who could it be? Who could it be? Could it be Satan? You gotta love that sound system right there, huh? You gotta dig it. That's the first time I've done that in the new room, too. That's the first time. Really, that's what he says. And when he says that, these religious folks, they get really, really mad because they're saying, you're from the lineage of the devil. You don't know God. You're not close with him. If you were, you'd see who I am. You'd see through the veneer and the facade. They reject him. See, the great can never receive something that they haven't already thought of because that would mean that I'm somewhat less than because you thought of it before I did. This is one of the reasons why the greats eventually come down. Greats eventually come down. I hope all you guys up there that you have really great prom dates and I hope that happens for you and I hope that you're, popular athletes or cheerleaders or whatever is most popular in your school, whatever was most popular. I hope you're that way. But learn from all of us know that the greats in high school became the less, didn't they? Became the less. I don't know exactly why that is. I don't know if it was pride. I don't know if it was natural abilities and natural looks get you, look so much when you're 17, but then gravity comes into all of us and difficulties come into all of us, then you got to do some good old-fashioned discipline, and they weren't used to. I don't know, Rita, but we've all seen that greats eventually become lesses. Any of us who've gone to a 20-year class reunion, we've all seen that. I think it's partially because you're not used to working. You're not used to honoring the process. And Jesus lived this process of complete lessness from the world's eyes to utter and complete greatness. That's the two things I want you to leave here today thinking about. Number one, embrace the path of lessness to greatness. Embrace the path. Embrace the path. Embrace it. This is the way you become great, is going through lessness. So I know some of us are thinking, alrighty, well, why would you even be worried about being great, Brian? I mean, isn't that kind of conceited? I mean, isn't that bad to think about being great? No, it's not. It's not. Why do I say that? It's because Jesus never came down on being great. He had the perfect opportunity to diss on anybody who was great. He was walking around with some friends, and a mother of one of his friends came to him, and she was an overbearing mother, an overbearing Jewish mom. He was only hanging out with Jewish people. Overbearing Jewish mom, and said, Jesus, I see you're growing in popularity. Would you please have my boys, my two boys, John and James, have them sit at your right hand and your left hand? I want them to be closest to you. I want them to get all the perks of your kingdom. I want them to get all the perks of your greatness. Would you do that? And you can almost imagine what people were thinking as they were listening in on this. Some people were thinking, oh, shoot, man, darn. How come my mom isn't doing that for me? Shoot, now they're going to get the places. Now they're going to have the great stuff happen to them. How come, why not me? And others are probably thinking, oh man, Jesus is going to rip her a new one. Oh, this is good. I mean, she should know that, you know, it is not a good thing to ask for great things. She should know that it is not good to be great. Oh, she should know. And then people are thinking, oh, just watch what Jesus says of this. And here's what he says. He says, okay, well, here's the deal. He says, not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. He doesn't say whoever wants to be great among you is wrong. He doesn't say no one should want to be great. What he does is he redefines it. He says, okay, you want to get great? Become less. You want to be great? Become a servant. You want to be great? Sleep in a slobber bowl. You want to become great? Be willing to receive rejection. You want to be great? Appreciate the lessness that you have right now. Boy, Christmas is a time where we all appreciate our lessness, don't we? Yeah? Accountants make their money April 1st, April 14th. Counselors make their money November 26th to December 25th. It's because now is the time we realize that our life isn't all that. It's really not. The perfect life that I keep seeing on the commercials is not my life. The perfect life and how it all turns out real well at the end of the Christmas special. I want to be a dentist. It doesn't work out for me. I love that. That's the first time I said that in this room, I think. You know, that's my fail. I'll probably hit that line at least three more times before the Christmas season's over. From Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, everything turns out okay at the end and everybody's happy, right? Isn't that the way all the Christmas specials work? Isn't that the way you see all the commercials? Everybody has brand new red L.L. Bean stuff on, right? Isn't that the way? And someone's going, I hate L.L. Bean, but I'd love to have the money to buy the kind of clothes I want. And we notice I don't have all the nice new things, and I can't buy all things I want. I still haven't paid off the credit card debt from last year. And I'm seeing these nice, beautiful Hallmark families. And I still don't have that. I thought I would have that, and I don't have that. And the family I do have, the kids I checked in the kids club, can I just leave them there for a couple weeks? You know, I'm seeing all this number. Somebody's 2669. That's been up there a while, you know. Someone's already left. They said, okay, I'm leaving my kids. You're not even seeing your number there. I was noticing that. You know, we notice the things in our life that aren't great. Hey, you know what? If you notice the things in your life that aren't great right now, guess what? You might be on the path to greatness. Lessness is the road to greatness. From lessness to greatness. I get bummed when I hear people who are married say, oh man, we never fight. I think, oh, it's too bad you don't have a great marriage. That's just too bad. Really, anybody who's been married a long time, know that there are seasons when you really cannot stand the person. Everything they say is wrong. You have disagreements. And you know that that lessness, that frustration was the foundation and the gateway to getting to where you are and being totally vulnerable and open and having a great relationship. Every great marriage goes through lessness. Maybe one of the reasons why Jesus so often spoke about money and so often said things that made rich people feel uncomfortable was because he was saying, if you are great financially, you are going to have a really hard time ever having a great relationship with God, because quite frankly, you don't need God. You have your checking account. You have your insurance policies. You have your retirement account. Maybe that's why he said things like, it's easier for a camel to be squeezed through an eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get to heaven. And I've said that before. Some people have come up to me and said, oh, well, you know what? There was this little thing in a gate, gates of Jerusalem, and camels had to go down and squeeze through. It's called the eye of the needle. And, you know, it is true that there was something like that, but that's not what Jesus meant. You know who likes that interpretation? Rich people. That's who likes that interpretation. Rich people, because that means I can do it. I just have to squeeze through. You know, everyone said when they heard that, they said, oh, well, who in the world could ever come to God? Because it's impossible. Camels can't go through needles. It's possible for a camel to scrunch through a little gate, but no camel can go through. That's impossible. And Jesus says, exactly right, it's impossible. But it's possible with God. It's possible for you to be humbled and God to humble you. The more you have, the more good looks you have, the more money you have, the more prestige you have, the more power, the more influence you have, the harder it will be for you to ever have God, because you don't need God. You're deluded with your own greatness and your herodness. Greatness comes through lessness. It's not impossible, but all, and by the way, who is great? Who is great? Because some of us are in here, oh yeah, I'm glad you're going after those rich people. You're rich. You're rich. We went over to South Africa right now and people saw how you lived your life and they saw that you were able to sleep in a room. Only you. You had your own room. Your own room. Then you got up in the morning, you walked down a few flights of steps, and you bought a drink that had like five different calorie-laden ingredients in it that cost $4. They'd say, what? Who could do that? Oh, you were the rich. You know, we never feel rich. We see someone doing it. We are the rich. We are the rich. And we can depend on our stuff as opposed to on God. Greatness comes through lessness. Embrace that path. Second thing is seek God, not greatness. Seek God, not greatness. God is not the path to our greatness. God is the thing. And when you attain God and you attain the life that He has designed for you or will design for you, you'll find that you often find greatness. Maybe not defined as your neighbor defines it. But the question is, do we want God or do we want greatness? Hey, none of us should debate the fact that Jesus was less and that He is now great. None of us should. None of us should debate that. We're here talking about a guy 2,005 years later. Obviously He's great. Obviously. Obviously He is. I mean, there's not a person in the entire history of the world that's more respected than Jesus. You can't name a single person that is universally more accepted. And I mean all spiritualities, all religions. Nobody is against Jesus. I mean, people have different ideas of who He was, but He's the greatest, most popular philosopher, spiritualist, whatever that you want to imagine. People are celebrating Him and thinking about Him all across the globe in larger numbers than any one individual person 2,005 years later. In fact, so much so that we have this thing called AD, Latin, in the year of our Lord. And I'm not saying that we all agree that Jesus is Lord. We don't. We're all different places spiritually. All I'm trying to say, help us realize, is you cannot refute the fact that He is the greatest. He's the only person who ever had time dated after Him. And if greatness was bad, then Jesus would have never had time dated after Him. People wouldn't recognize Him today, and you wouldn't have the changes in your life that you have today if it was not a great influence of love that was coming to you. Everyone hears about this thing with Jesus kind of being in here, a little slobber pit. Everyone's like, oh, so cute. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, you know. Everyone feels pity for and accepts somebody here. But as Jesus goes from less and becomes greater and greater and greater to the point where he stands right now and looks at you and I and says, you know what I want? I want you to slot yourself under me. Not because I need the affirmation, because I know how your life needs to work, and I need you to slot. You need to slot your life under God, who I am, and you need to do that. That's a difficult thing for us. We're less prone to do that. And the amazing thing for me about Jesus is that He was always comfortable with wherever He was. He was okay with that identity inside the manger. He was okay as people were hurling insults at Him. He was okay with various stages of His life. He didn't like all of them, but He was confident in His identity as a loved child, beloved son of God. who came to be with us. The purpose of Jesus, part of His identity, is He is with us. Not this figure 2,005 years ago, but He is with us. So when I sing, O come Emmanuel, I'm saying, God, I want You to come and inhabit my life. I want You to bring Your greatness to my lessness.
One great thing about the song, too, is that if we will say yes to not the Herod style of greatness, but the Jesus style of greatness and the humility in which He presents Himself, is that the song, the refrain is, rejoice, rejoice, because He will come to you. He sees that as an open invitation, and He says, yeah, I'll go there. So, happy song.
Let's stand and do that right now.